SEO, I think it's not completely undervalued, but I think people don't always realize it's important as it is, because if your site is really well optimized, then actually that has an impact on your paid media search, because the better quality your site is, the less you're going to spend per click to be at the top of the rankings. So actually by investing in SEO in the long term is actually going to benefit your other channels anyways.
It's the E-commerce Master Plan podcast, here to help you solve your marketing problems and grow your e-commerce business. Cutting through the hype to bring you inspiration and advice from the e-commerce sector and beyond. Here's your host, Chloe Thomas.
Hello and welcome. It's great to have you here. Thank you so much for hitting play and choosing to listen to one of our inspiring guests. We're going to start this episode with a little shout out. Hello to regular listener Joe Jax from Jax. Joe's been super active commenting on our LinkedIn content over the last few months, and it's always great to hear your take on things, Joe. So thank you. And most importantly, thank you for listening. Now, in this episode, we are doing another of our new episode format, our WWYDs, the What Would You Do episodes, where I get some of my favourite people in e-commerce to come on and share how they would handle a hypothetical situation. This time, I'm chatting to a super experienced e-commerce director about what would you do as a head of e-commerce tasked with massively improving operational efficiency. Yes, we're going there. We are talking about operational efficiency. Jamie is sharing great insight about the areas you need to look into, how to make it successful, how to prioritize. And there's quite a lot about people in this one too. Please make sure you listen to the end of the episode, because she's got some brilliant top tips, answers as well. Are you using Yotpo for your email and SMS campaigns? Then you will already know the great news that they're sunsetting their email and SMS service at the end of this year. I know it's not the news you wanted to hear this close to peak. Yay, let's move our email system. So to help you with all of that, over on the e-commerce tech website, we are putting together a couple of blogs to help you to navigate it all and to turn this surprise into a brilliant move for your business. One that can even, or certainly has the potential to even, increase your peak performance. To get the blogs, go to ecmp.info/yotpo, that's Y-O-T-P-O and E-C-M-P. And there you can read my four-step plan to make the most of the situation. And you'll also get a roundup of advice from email marketing experts about what you should do. So ecmp.info/yotpo. Have you yet downloaded our ebook? To celebrate reaching episode 500, we've created an epic e-commerce success-focused ebook for you, packed with 500 top tips about how to make your e-commerce store more profitable, featuring the advice of many, many past guests alongside industry experts and many of you as well, our listeners. I've checked every single tip and organize the whole thing into sections for you, making it super easy to dip in and dip out and take inspiration as and when you need it. This ebook needs to be sat on your desktop, or even printed and sat on your desk. Download your free copy right now at ecmp.info/ebook. Get 2024's most valuable e-commerce ebook now, ecmp.info/ebook. And now to introduce our special guest. Jamie Hill is an e-commerce director with a fearsome lineup of past experience, including time in fashion at Monsoon, Fat Face and Jack Wills, in travel at Hurtigruten, Norway and Avis, and home and garden at Oak Furniture Land, plus many more. Hello, Jamie.
Hello. Happy Monday.
Great to have you on the show. Someone with your awesome experience to come and be one of our What Would You Do guests. But before we get into your What Would You Do, how did you get into the world of e-commerce? How did you end up in this space?
I kind of fell into it. Started in marketing by accident. I was doing a job straight out of college. They offered me an opportunity. Sounded great. So I thought, yeah, I'll snap that one up. And then as kind of digital grew, I moved into that. And then, yeah, probably the last 10, 15 years into digital marketing and e-commerce. So looking at that sort of whole customer life cycle, really.
Which is only getting more complicated, isn't it? With privacy coming in and more tech complexity, it just seems to be getting ever harder.
Yes and no. I think the principles are relatively simple. Yeah, you can get some complexity when you chuck in some of the tools, but they are supposed to make your life easier and help you target customers better. I think it's just a case of getting them set up properly in the first place so you can use them more effectively. So it's a bit swings and roundabouts, I think, really.
I couldn't agree with you more about getting them set up right in the first place. But let's not get into that world of ranting, because that could take the whole of the rest of the episode. So
yeah.
The what would you do you are tackling today is, what would you do as head of e-commerce tasked with massively improving operational efficiency, which I love as a task, as a title, because I know this is pretty much what everyone's being charged with at the moment, is efficiency, efficiency, efficiency. So
doing more with less.
Yeah, the endless challenge of 2025, I think. So is this for a specific business size, for businesses doing specific channels, for specific products, or is this kind of like something that would be relevant to anybody listening?
Yeah, I think it's relevant for anybody, to be honest. It's not quite a one size fits all, because obviously some areas will need more focus than others, but there's certainly probably three or four areas that I would look at in terms of making those efficiencies and how to get things running a bit more smoothly, really.
Cool. And when you're talking operational efficiency, for some people that they immediately think of the warehouse. For others, they think about head office or spreadsheets or something. For you, where does operational efficiency sit?
So some of it will be looking at warehousing. You know, it's how does it cross over from e-com into that area? How can you make that process simpler and make sure they have everything they need? But for me, it's looking at the team. How are they working? Like, you know, is there somebody that's got a really great skill that's being underutilized? It could be optimizing the tech stack. If you've got two things doing essentially the same thing, that you could get rid of one. You know, it could be, is there an agency you can hand over some of the heavy lifting to without spending more money and free up somebody to do this more strategic stuff? Looking at spend, you know, are we spending properly in the right areas? So you might start to look at multi, you know, the MMM modeling processes as well. You know, are we wasting time doing lengthy processes rather than shortcuttings and some areas where necessary without damaging the overall process and how things work? So it's kind of everything within your remit, but also how it falls into other areas, you know. So if a change you could make reduces calls to the call center for certain problems, can you then free them up to take sales calls or payment calls or whatever? Yeah, it's it could be a whole gamut of items, really, to be honest.
I love it. Maximum width of definition we're going yeah. for, which I think is exactly what people are getting tasked with. The boss isn't saying, can you improve operational efficiency in this tiny part of the business? The boss is inevitably saying, I don't know where, but we need to be more efficient. Go. So assuming the boss said that to you, what would your first steps be? Where would you start working out where to go, what to do?
I probably would start actually with the immediate team. You know, what are they spending most of their time on? Is it particular processes? Can you shorten those processes? Can you remove some steps? Can you scrap that process completely? Because sometimes you can. Do they have skills and experience in an area that's being underutilized? You know, do they have capacity to, you know, do more in a certain area and get rid of something that's just unnecessary? You know, people have always got kind of hidden skills and experience that you don't necessarily know about when you join a team, because you don't necessarily see their CV. So that's one thing I always like to do when I join a new business, is sit down with the team and say, okay, what do you currently do? What's taking up most of your time? What potentially could we get rid of? What do you want to be doing? Because obviously you need to kind of think about future personal development and kind of succession planning, because it's not always about the CEO succession planning. It's other areas as well, you know, and then sort of moving into the processes that they're spending most of their time on. What other parts of the company do they touch on? there's projects and stuff that I've worked on that have been completely cross-functional. So, for example, at Hurtigruten, there was a payments project that I was working on, which covered the website, the call centre, the ships and the hotel. And obviously that's in multiple countries. So it was looking at the, you know, the localised payment options, which we could switch on and off by, you know, country, whatever's needed, and, you know, make sure that people can actually pay for things that they want to in an efficient manner. You know, so for example, with Germany, we discovered that our authorization rate was absolutely shocking. It was like 50% for cards. So we got a load of information from the call center colleagues. We, you know, looked at our Adyen dashboard and we got recommendations from Adyen, the partners themselves, and sort of said, okay, right, well, what happens in Germany is people typically use buy now, pay later, or they like to be sent an invoice and then they pay it by bank transfer. So we then looked into all the stats, took all the evidence from the call center, which was, that's what people were asking for. So we did a mini business case, literally within sign off to live. It was about 2 weeks. And within a week, we'd gone from 50 to 85% authorization. Now, the kind of side benefits to that was the transaction fee for bank transfer is much, much cheaper. I think for us, it was 1% versus 3% for cards. Less calls to the call center because there's less people calling in saying, I can't pay for my cruise. You know, and the money's in our bank much quicker because it's bank to bank rather than sitting with Adyen for, I think, about, I don't know, a month, 60 days waiting to be released in case of refunds. So there's huge commercial impact as well as customers being happy, you know, but that what didn't just sit with Econ, that was across channels. So, yeah, I mean, you know, processes, obviously spend has got to be a huge one. You know, are we wasting spend anywhere? Which, obviously, you would look at paid search and paid social straight away. You know, are we wasting money there when we could be improving our SEO, for example? Are we paying agencies too much money? Obviously, I'm not saying scrap them because there are benefits to them. Like I touched upon earlier, the tech stack, you know, do we have multiple pieces of technology doing the same thing? So, you know, you might have merchandising built into your e-commerce platform, but you're actually using another one, which is the best one, you know, and are you wasting money having two bits of kit doing exactly the same thing? So, yeah, looking at pretty much everything and anything and kind of pulling up the floorboards and seeing what's underneath, really.
But what I love from your answer, Jamie, is that you started with the team. And I think so often people think you go straight to the spreadsheets. But actually the thing about driving operational efficiency, I always think, is that it's both about optimizing what you're already doing, but also finding out the stuff that you've got that you're not taking advantage of, which the spreadsheets aren't going to tell you. You know, like when you've got two pieces of tech stack doing the same thing, the data analysis isn't going to tell you that. You need the person who works with them going, did you know there's a whole module on here? Or you need, like, all those of us listening who have run recruitments in the past will know that you've hired someone because they had this really cool thing on their CV and you've forgotten about it by the time they start.
Yeah, or you just don't take advantage of it because you don't have the time and there's other priorities and then you forget about it, like you say. But yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not in any way saying that you should get rid of people just for the sake of saving money, because actually asking them to do things differently or free up something else and take on something more strategic or something that has bigger impact that they are perfectly capable of doing can actually, you know, outweigh the benefits of getting rid of somebody, you know, because actually they could be working smarter to generate more money rather than you save money because you've got rid of a salary. It doesn't always work the way that you necessarily think at first glance. So, and, you know, I've been the impact of some of those decisions, unfortunately. So I don't really want to see other people going through it either. So yeah, please, people, think more about the team. See what you can do to optimize that first.
Yeah, having been through a few redundancy processes, both as the person, both as being amongst the team who are at risk of redundancy, I wasn't technically, so I was on the grad scheme, and yes, this was many years ago, everybody, and then doing it with my own team, there is nothing that kills productivity, motivation, the intangible cost of any of those processes is horrendous. Anything you can do to avoid them.
Yeah. I mean, being deeply involved in it from either side of the coin is not fun. you know, either being one at risk or having to choose who goes at risk is, it's not a decision that you want to be forced to have to make, really. But I guess it's life at the end of the day. But yeah, if you can avoid it, I'd recommend it.
And I think a lot of the things you mentioned of those places you would look in the first instances for where to build the operational efficiency are, I think we can all agree we fail to do this, but we can probably agree with the theory, is that as our industry evolves, especially as the tech space is evolving a lot at the moment, they are things which we should be checking on a regular basis, but we tend to forget. You know, so you mentioned about diverting money from your ad campaigns into SEO. You know, how often do we actually take that big strategic, actually, hold on, are we flogging a dead horse with Meta these days? Is it still working to the level it is? Should we shift half the budget into a new ad channel or into SEO? And the same thing with the tech stack, with all the mergers and the developments going on at the moment. That review, in an ideal world, would be done on a much more regular basis, but it does tend to be almost like the big stop sign comes up and I'm like, oh, maybe we should take a look. You know, why have we got 100 Google Drive subscriptions going on in the business of 10 people? What are we doing?
Yeah. And I think, you know, sometimes looking at the modelling of how spend is working and where you're spending it, I think can be hugely valuable. And it's something that they really started to look at Monsoon, which was great because, you know, it would give you it kind of day by day updates and say, actually, do you know what? This week we need to be moving more money from, you know, maybe money from Meta to Google or vice versa, because actually it's more effective here this week. But obviously you need to make sure that those data feeds into the system are accurate and correct, because otherwise it's a bit of that crap in, crap out. Same with things like AI. If you are put like dirty data in, you're going to get rubbish out. Obviously, you need to make sure there's no bias going on as well. But, you know, it, in theory, you could be moving money around every week. And yeah, I mean, we'll probably touch on it a bit later. But SEO, I think, is it's not completely undervalued. But I think people don't always realise it's important as it is. Because if your site is really well optimised, ideally it's really well optimized for accessibility as well, which, you know, all counts. And then actually that has an impact on your paid media search, because the better quality your site is, and I believe this is still the way it works, you know, the less you're going to spend per click to be at the top of the rankings. So, you know, and your quality score is better and you'll rank better and all that kind of stuff. So actually by investing in SEO in the long term is actually going to benefit your other channels anyway. So yeah, it's all a bit chicken and egg to an extent. But I'm not saying everybody just go and cut your paid media spend. Absolutely not. But you should be looking at it regularly and saying, actually, are we spending wisely? Have we found the right balance between volume and cost? Sometimes you do have to pay money to spend on those big generic terms, because, you know, there's multiple searches before people narrow things down. I mean, I worked for an insurance company years ago and we uncovered that people would do 7 separate searches before they would actually take an action. So they might start searching car insurance, or car insurance Ford Focus, car insurance Ford Focus over 50, car insurance Ford Focus over 50 in Chelmsford. You know, they would do multiple searches and then they would actually get on and do a quote or something like that, or pick the phone up, or, you know, they would actually then take an action. But, you know, you have to sort of pay for those car insurance terms, although they're horribly expensive, to filter people down. You know, everybody knows the long tail keywords are the cheaper ones and more cost effective in the long run, but you don't always get the volume through them. So it is a bit of a balancing act.
An endless balancing act.
Oh, yeah.
Jamie, you've given us, you know, a whole host of different areas to look at to find the right places to drive that efficiency, which of course the answers will be different for every business. But how do you go about making it happen? Because I think I always think when there's an operational efficiency project on, there's an expectation of fast changes, but there also has to be all the research, as you've outlined, you know, whether it's looking at the data or whether it's, you know, talking to the team or something else. And there also has to be some element of sign off or agreement on, you know, because there are only so many hours in a day. So you have to decide what to prioritize. So how do you go about both making sure you're doing the right things, the due diligence, I suppose, part of it, but also making impact fast, which I think are the kind of the two competing aims of an operational efficiency project.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, sometimes you don't actually need sign-off because sometimes the smallest tweaks can have a huge impact. So, you know, just cutting out three steps in a process, you know, could save you a couple of hours, meaning you've got more time to do other things. So it's not always about getting sign-off. Sometimes, you know, you can come in and go, right, okay, well, I need to overhaul X, Y, Z. And, you know, whoever you're reporting into, it might just give you free rein to do that. So if you're lucky. Sometimes, yeah, you might need to say, look, I found this opportunity. I've been here 5 minutes. If I make this change, what does that mean for X, Y, Z? You know, because, you know, you making one change in your team might have huge impact in your area, but it might really mess things up for somebody else. It might generate, you know, thousands of more calls in the call center, which, you know, if they can't cope with it, then you end up with unhappy customers. So, you know, making a change that makes things life easier for you and your team, great. But if you've made it life so much more difficult for everybody else, it's not going to help. So, you know, if you're new in, very often you would need to double check something because you don't know the rest of the setup and who else maybe needs to be consulted before you actually put it into place. In terms of, you know, what would you prioritise? Again, it's a balance of quick wins as opposed to what's going to deliver the biggest impact, because the quick win might deliver the biggest impact, but actually the biggest impact might be delivered by something that takes a couple of weeks to do. You know, you do need to have enough information and facts to hand before you make those decisions. But then, you know, as I say, a lot of that comes from having conversations. So a lot of it stems down to communication. And the way, I mean, I've come across it in several companies. It's like, well, that's the way we've always done it, right? But that doesn't mean that's the best way to do it. I've found a quicker way to do it. Why can't we do it? Is there a particular reason? Is there a person, a system, another process that's holding it up? Do I need to go and talk to another team who also needs to change their process to smooth out, you know, the entire journey rather than fixing one bit and then breaking something else, which is a bit like when you're doing experimentation on a website, CRO. I've been lucky enough to work with tools like Content Square, where you can see that the impact of the change you've made. So yes, it's fixed the piece that you were looking to fix, but has it impacted somewhere else? So you can either go, okay, right, we need to roll that back temporarily, or actually we can fix that really easily. So you can almost sanity check that you haven't broken anything, but you can't always do that with just changing a process because, you know, you need to find out how it affects everybody else, sort of the knock-on effect, maybe before and after what you've changed.
I suppose there's also an angle of having those conversations helps create a less siloed business, a business where there's more visibility of what's going on, where people are working more closely together, which often is actually a root cause of some operational efficiency. You know, it's the web team built this bought this personalization tool, the marketing team bought this personalization tool, and 80% of what the two tools do is the same thing. And now the IT team are having to build two separate integrations and all the data's gone wrong. So there's an element of the process of an operational efficiency project can help, I guess, future-proof the business for future efficiency.
Yeah, and also it's building relationships as well. You know, by having these various different conversations with different parts of the business, not only do you get to learn about how they work and information about things you didn't even know existed or processes they do, but then you also find out their headaches, which, you know, you can say, oh, do you know what? I came across this in another business. I didn't really get involved in it, but this is what they did. So actually, inadvertently, you could be helping them with something else just by passing on a bit of information. So, yeah, I mean, everyone says, you know, communication's one of the biggest things that you can do, but not everybody does it. And yeah, silos, I think, are probably the bane of a lot of people's lives. I think most places are starting to change, certainly in the experience I've had in the last few businesses, but it is still a bit of a, people just kind of get their heads down and, you know, work on what they're doing, get things done, and then forget to tell people. It's like, look at what we've done as a team, or this is what we've done as a department. And people go, oh, great. Do you know what? We can borrow some of that. Or I really like the way you've done that. How did you get to that? you know, result, and then they can sort of transfer that learning into their own areas. So, yeah, I just wish people would talk a bit more, to be honest. It would be really nice. And that goes for probably every part of everybody's lives, to be honest. I think there'd be a lot less problems if everybody talked a little bit more.
E-commerce Master Plan is supported by some of the greatest companies in the e-commerce sector. Here's a reminder of who they are.
Are you using Yotpo for your email and SMS campaigns? Then you will already know the great news that they're sunsetting their email and SMS service at the end of this year. I know it's not the news you wanted to hear this close to peak. Yay, let's move our email system. So to help you with all of that, over on the e-commerce tech website, we are putting together a couple of blogs to help you to navigate it all and to turn this surprise into a brilliant move for your business. One that can even, or certainly has the potential to even increase your peak performance. To get the blogs, go to ecmp.info/yotpo. That's Y-O-T-P-O and E-C-M-P. And there you can read my four-step plan to make the most of the situation. And you'll also get a roundup of advice from email marketing experts about what you should do. So ecmp.info/yotpo. Have you yet downloaded our ebook? To celebrate reaching episode 500, we've created an epic e-commerce success-focused ebook for you, packed with 500 top tips about how to make your e-commerce store more profitable, featuring the advice of many, many past guests alongside industry experts and many of you as well, our listeners. I've checked every single tip and organize the whole thing into sections for you, making it super easy to dip in and dip out and take inspiration as and when you need it. This ebook needs to be sat on your desktop or even printed and sat on your desk. Download your free copy right now at ecmp.info/ebook. Get 2024's most valuable e-commerce ebook now, ecmp.info/ebook.
It's time for the top tips round.
Okay, I love this section because it gives me and our listeners some really quick ideas for taking our businesses to the next level. So Jamie, are you ready for the top tips?
Oh yeah, go on then.
Okay, the book top tip. If everyone listening to this podcast agreed to take Friday off and read a book to make their business better, which book would you recommend? And you've already waved this at me via the video call, so I'm fascinated to know what it is.
So it's probably not what you would actually think. So it's by Ed Catmull, who is one of the founders of Pixar, and it's called Creativity Inc. And yeah, like I said to you earlier, I don't write in books. They are pretty sacred, but I've got little bookmarks and I've underlined so much stuff in here. It's absolutely, you know, crazy. I mean, here's just one sentence. As always, how feedback is worded is crucial. Super simple. But, you know, it's how you phrase it. Like, is it constructive criticism or is it you did this wrong and that's what's broken that, rather than next time you do this, could you think of a better way to do it? Because unfortunately, it's, you know, messed something up for someone else. Just, and, you know, being able to give that feedback without judgment. Just, you know, really, there's such great stuff in here. Do not become attached to your ideas.
Jamie, before we lose you to the book, listeners, you can't see her right now, but she is beaming, flicking through the book, which you can probably hear, and she's put glasses on in order to actually be able to read it. So
I've got the wrong contact lenses in today.
So I think I love that recommendation, partly because you're so passionate about it, but also I love the fact that we've been talking about operational efficiency and the book recommendation is Creativity Inc., which almost feels like they don't connect, but they're so interlinked.
Yeah, they absolutely do, because there is a lot of stuff about processes, but it's also the human process of like how you think about things and how people become attached to their ideas. So when you try and add to it and make it bigger and better, people get really upset because it then doesn't become their idea. So yeah, there's all sorts of really cool stuff in there. And I mean, I haven't actually finished reading it yet because I've gone back and scribbled all over it. But I think most people know and like at least one or two Pixar films. So There's plenty of stories about how they came about, some of the stories and how long they worked on certain things and how they fixed what they saw as the problems in it to, you know, make this actually really cool package at the end of it. So, yeah, it's not a typical boring business book. It's quite fun. And yeah, there's tons of stuff in it that you could, you know, you could almost open a page and find, you know, something to make you think differently in there. It's cool.
I love that. Okay, the traffic top tip. Which marketing method do you either prize above all others or think doesn't get the press it deserves?
We kind of touched on this earlier. I think SEO, although there has been a lot more focus on it in recent years, I think it has such a big impact on other channels inadvertently. You know, if you're right at the top of the rankings and someone's seen your ad on TV and just is feeling lazy and types in your brand name and you pop up at the top and you're not squashed to the bottom by five of your competitors, you know, and like I said before, it impacts on other channels like paid search and things as well. So I like to see it as the foundation of all your other marketing efforts. You know, you've built a great site. Why are you not doing the best to get free/cheap traffic to it without, you know, paying for it? So yeah, I think that's probably one of the ones I'd pick.
Definitely agree with you on that. Now, the tool top tip, maybe a collaboration tool, a social media plugin, a phone app, or just a way of working. Is there a cool little tool you use that makes you and your team more efficient from day to day?
I would probably choose Trello, actually. I use it for personal projects and stuff as well. But a guy that I used to work with at Oak Furniture Land, he actually linked it in with all our IT tickets and stuff. So he could automatically update things and send it through there. It was absolutely nuts. And he linked it up to all the designs for the CRO project. So I think he linked it up to about four different tools in the end. It was just insane. Jira tickets, that's what he linked it to. So yeah, and it just visually, it looks quite fun. You can click and drag things around. It's not exactly difficult to use. So yeah, that's one I use quite frequently.
Excellent recommendation. And finally, the carbon top tip. What's your favourite way to reduce the carbon footprint of an e-commerce store?
I'm not sure it's my favourite way, but it's one that probably people don't think about, is checking your hosting company to see whether they use renewable energy. Because obviously, you know, processing power for our website and AI and all that kind of stuff is huge. I mean, we still don't really know the impact of all this AI processing power. So I think, yeah, looking at your hosting company and seeing, you know, who's their energy supplier, is it renewable energy? That's a huge way to kind of cut down on your carbon footprint.
I love that one. It's a once and done as well. You know, as much as anything can
be.
Yeah,
so. Yeah. Unless you obviously have to change hosting company for whatever reason. But I guess if yours is pretty reliable, then you won't need to. But yeah.
But even if you do have to change hosting company, you do it once and you get the carbon benefit every single day. It's, love that one. Does not get talked about enough. So I'm really glad you brought that one up.
No, I came across it at an event that I went to and they were like, oh yeah, we've looked at our hosting company because they were looking at their kind of carbon neutral profile and how do they become sort of move towards carbon zero. And that was literally one of the things that they said that, and it's really kind of stuck with me. It's just not anything that you would like normally think about, because you think about recycling cardboard and, you know, waste and, you know, your business energy, like, is that renewable and all that kind of stuff. And you never think about your suppliers as much. So, yeah, I think that one could be an interesting thing to think about for people.
Definitely. Well, Jamie, before we say goodbye, could you please let the listeners know where they can find you and everything you're up to on the web and social?
Yeah. So the best place to find me is on LinkedIn. So it's, all the /.coms. And then it's Jamie, which is Jaime-Hill.
And you are available to help people with operational efficiency, I believe, at the moment, and other projects?
Yeah. Currently, I'm available to help with e-commerce, digital marketing, you know, customer lifecycle. Yeah, any operational efficiencies, pretty much probably, you know, whatever the problem is, I can probably help you with it in some way or another.
Awesome. So everyone head to Jaime Hill on LinkedIn, and that's Jaime-Hill in LinkedIn URL-ness if you want to go that route. Jaime, thank you so much for being on the podcast and sharing such great insights with us. It's been awesome.
Oh, thanks for inviting me on. It's been great fun.
What great insights from Jamie there. Really love talking to her about that. I think it's really fascinating how you think ops and efficiency and you don't necessarily think it starts with the people, but the theme throughout everything Jamie took us through there was it's all about the people and their skill sets and their hidden talents and their experience of the job. You know, if you want to find where the waste is, I bet your people already know. And then building those relationships cross-team, cross-company, so you've got that future-proofed element. So if you want help with that kind of stuff, do get in contact with Jamie. I know she's currently looking for permanent or contract roles. Or at least she was when we were recording this. She may have been snapped up by now. But either way, get in contact with her if you want help with that kind of thing. Now, to get your hands on the notes from this episode, including the top tips and the links to what we mentioned, then head over to ecommercemasterplan.com. You can also use our direct episode short links. Just put ecmp.info/ the number of this episode into the URL bar and you'll be redirected straight to the right episode page. And when you get to the website, go on. Add yourself to our email list. You know you want to get our newsletter too. Now, if you like this episode, then make sure you check out episode 561, which is our very first ever What Would You Do? Which is, what would you do if you were to take over an e-commerce business in the 10 to 25 million pound range? Fascinating chat, that one. Well worth a listen. You can find that and all our What Would You Do episodes at ecmp.info/WWYD. Thank you for tuning in to this and every episode of the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. I bring you a new interview every week because I want to inspire and help e-commerce business owners just like you to succeed and thrive with your businesses, including progressing along the path to net zero. So, if you know someone this show can help, please tell them to listen to the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. I hope you have a great week and don't forget to keep optimizing.
Thank you for listening to the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. Find out more at ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast.
Are you using Yotpo for your email and SMS campaigns? Then you will already know the great news that they're sunsetting their email and SMS service at the end of this year. I know it's not the news you wanted to hear this close to peak. Yay, let's move our email system. So to help you with all of that, over on the e-commerce tech website, we are putting together a couple of blogs to help you to navigate it all and to turn this surprise into a brilliant move for your business. One that can even, or certainly has the potential to even increase your peak performance. To get the blogs, go to ecmp.info/yotpo, that's Y-O-T-P-O and E-C-M-P. And there you can read my four-step plan to make the most of the situation. And you'll also get a roundup of advice from email marketing experts about what you should do. So ecmp.info/yotpo. Have you yet downloaded our ebook? To celebrate reaching episode 500, we've created an epic e-commerce success-focused ebook for you, packed with 500 top tips about how to make your e-commerce store more profitable, featuring the advice of many, many past guests alongside industry experts and many of you as well, our listeners. I've checked every single tip and organize the whole thing into sections for you, making it super easy to dip in and dip out and take inspiration as and when you need it. This ebook needs to be sat on your desktop or even printed and sat on your desk. Download your free copy right now at ecmp.info/ebook. Get 2024's most valuable e-commerce ebook now, ecmp.info/ebook.